On the line now, I have Fintan Lawler from Lawler and Partners. Hello, getting that all mixed up a little bit this morning. James Brown upsets the brain sometimes. How are you, Fintan?
How are you doing?
How are you? Okay, I'm going to start off. I just wanted to go over something. We got a call after you finished the last time and I wrote it down. It's just a repeat of a girl that there's no mortgage on the house and she's been living with her grandmother for grandparents for the last couple of years. So how was she fixed? There's no mortgage. The grandparents have gone. They've left the house to her, but she's been living with them for 5 years or so. So what's the parameters for that?
Yeah, they are going to have to get specialised advice on this now, because it's not your generic query of what is the threshold between a parent and child or between a grandparent and a grandchild, because there is a kind of favourite child allowance or grandchild allowance. But just to recap, if you're a child of a deceased, you don't pay any tax on an amount up as far as €310,000. That is exempt from tax. So if you inherit €200,000, no tax. €250,000, €280,000, €300,000, no tax. When you go over €310,000 as a child, you are then liable to tax.
Okay.
And you're liable to tax on all amounts over €310,000 at a rate of 33%. It's a flat rate of 33%. So it's 33% on the first 10,000, over 310,000, the next 10,000, the next 10,000, so on and so forth.
Okay.
So somebody inherits 300,000, they're exempt. They inherit 510,000, they're exempt on 310,000. They have a tax rate on the extra 200,000 at 33%, which is €66,000.
Okay, so that's
now, that's called Class A, and that's parent to child. If you move to Class B, it's a parent to, it is a nephew or a niece or a brother or a sister, and they can inherit, I think it's 32,684 or something like that, but it's 32,000 approx without paying any tax. Again, if they get 20 or 25,000, it's exempt. When they go over to 32,000, they're also liable to tax at a rate of 33%. There are certain circumstances where a grandchild can be considered to be a child or a favourite nephew or a favourite niece relief. You'll have it down the country as well in relation to a young farmer relief. So there are certain rules and criteria that if somebody is living in the family home and they don't have a property of their own and they're there for a certain period of years, that in those circumstances they can qualify for the higher exemption. So that would mean that in that listener's question, she's a grandchild, so she's in the category of 32,000, but she might be able to make an application to the Revenue Commissioners to be considered to be a child.
Okay.
Because for all intents and purposes, she had the role of a child of living in the house a certain period of years, etc. And she might get the higher relief.
Okay.
But it's quite a specialised question, so she probably should just seek specialised advice. But the Revenue Commission can be very helpful, though, in respect to these things. If somebody has a query with them, they can just ring up and make a general query, going, hi, can I just ask a question? How does it work, sort of thing.
Okay, and just to clarify to the extent, just the best thing to do, as you said there yourself, is just go and see a solicitor and ask the questions, and you get all the answers you want there. And just finally, on that, just a 310,000 allowance. If there's, say, for instance, there's four children, and the house is worth 120,000. They, if it was shared equally among four, they would all come out more or less without paying tax, wouldn't they?
They will. Well, just in that example, no, you said the house was less than 120 or thereabouts. None of them will pay tax because they each have a threshold of 310,000.
Yeah. Okay. Just to clarify that.
So in that circumstance, with four children, I mean, the estate would need to be worth more than 1.2 million. For them to start paying tax, because it's four times the 300,000 or 310,000. So it's an individual amount of 300,000. Just to go a step further on that, Noah, let's just say that somebody inherits from their mother when she passes away. We just give the mum, say the mum has a house and that's worth 150,000, and we'll just give it to the one child, and they inherit that at 150,000, they don't pay any tax. If 4 years later their dad dies, and we just have the parents are separated for this exercise, and the dad leaves a house worth 300,000, that person will end up paying tax because they've already used 150,000 of their threshold. Then there's a house they're receiving of 300,000. So when you put that together, they've received 450,000, and their tax band is 310, so they'll be taxed on the balance.
Okay. And
they are talking in government, they're talking very much so, Noel, about increasing that band, because the way it used to be, probably before the recession, now we're going back 10 years here, but the threshold at that stage for the child to inherit was somewhere in the region of €450,000.
Mm-hmm.
And the tax bill at that time was 20%, which was quite low tax, relatively speaking, and that you had a far greater threshold at €450,000. That was primarily dictated because of the rising property market, and that you could very easily have somebody leaving themselves a child in a house worth €700,000 or €800,000 with a threshold of €450,000, meaning that they had to sell the family home in order to pay the tax.
Yes, yeah.
And that shouldn't be the intention of the tax. That wasn't what it was set up to do. It was set up to bring some money into the coffers of the state for state-funded projects, but it wasn't intended that somebody, by virtue of inheriting their family home from their parent,
mm-hmm.
would be caused to sell it in order to pay tax. That's mm-hmm. hardly fair.
Okay.
So there is talk at government level at the moment about increasing those thresholds back up, and I think they probably should look at maybe decreasing the tax rate at this stage.
Mm-hmm. Can you put it on hold? You know, for instance, the way people with, I think, property taxing at the moment, they can sort of, I forget what the expression is, but they can sort of not pay the property tax, but when the house is sold, when they die or whatever, then they pay it on that. So if someone, say for instance, I had my parents and I was living with them and they both died, left me the house, it's worth €500,000. Can I put it in abeyance and say, well, look, you can take the tax money when I'm gone, when the house is gone altogether? Is that an option, or do you say to you, no, you have to pay the tax on the 180,000 or where it is, that's over?
Yeah, you'd have to talk to the Revenue Commissioners on it, Noel.
Okay.
Because it's probably a matter of negotiation. They're not too vicious, depending on your circumstances, but they can charge interest and penalties, and they can accrue interest. So that's to say, if you are due to pay and you don't engage with them, and you're late in your payment, they are entitled to charge you interest and penalties on the money that was due to them.
Okay.
So if you just take a figure of €50,000 and you don't give it to them for 2 years, they're quite entitled to term. And so if we had that 50,000 2 years ago, when you should have given it to us, we would have earned interest on it.
Okay.
But you didn't give it to us, so therefore we're now charging you interest on it. So you should negotiate with them and certainly contact them and advise them. But I think if you found yourself in difficult circumstances and that there was a dispute in relation to the house mm-hmm. or in relation to the estate and that the money wasn't available to you, I think they'd accommodate your request. Mm-hmm.
It just came into my head that it'd be better to end up on the street. Surely they wouldn't want to see you on the street. I know that you'd probably get another house for, but it doesn't matter, like, if you're sort of been living there all your life. Just go and see the revenue, and I suppose that they would be reasonable about it.
Absolutely.
Is the best advice. Okay. And next question now. My home has no mortgage. If I sell in order to purchase somewhere smaller, am I liable to be taxed on the remainder of the proceeds?
I'm not entirely sure.
Well, let's say, for instance, if someone has a house, they have they have no mortgage on it, and they sell it and they want to go downsize, say it's worth 320,000, and they go and buy a house for 200,000, if they move down the country, will they be liable for the 120,000 that they've made on the house?
They're not in circumstances, no, where it's their principal private residence. And it's, again, I suppose, a wee bit like I mentioned there earlier, that it wasn't intended when the government or revenue commissioner started taxing people that they would force the sale of a family home and then charge them tax on it. So in circumstances where you're selling your principal private residence, that's the place you live,
mm-hmm.
you're exempt from tax. If, however, just to take that a stage further, Noel, if by way of example that you were living in a house and an opportunity came up to buy your neighbour's house,
mm-hmm.
and you bought your neighbour's house and you rented it out for a number of years, and we'd say that the market moved on over that period of years, and we just say that you bought it for 200,000, and 5 years later you're in a position to sell it and you were selling it for 300,000, you would pay tax on the difference between the price you bought it at and the price you sold it at. You'd be able to take off your expenses, but you'd be paying tax on the difference between your price you bought it at and the price you sold it at, and that's called a capital gain.
Okay.
And you pay capital gains tax on that amount, and that's also a very high rate of tax at 33%.
Okay. Why would that not apply, Fintan, to to your own home. For instance, if let's say we're avoided again, I'll use myself as an example. If I said, listen to the wife, come on, we're going to move down the country somewhere nice and quiet, and if we buy a house that's cheaper in the country, we make a few bob and we can sit back and relax for the next couple of years as well. So would there be no capital gains tax there?
Not in that circumstance, okay. No, because it is your principal private residence, it is your home. So it's not an investment vehicle, and it's not something that you should really be paying tax on, because it's your home place, and you bought it and you paid off a mortgage, and it's just gone up in value, and now you're selling it. So whatever profit you make is yours.
Okay.
And it's not taxed. But as I say, it's a good example that if you're moving down the country, you have an extra few bob available to you.
Mm-hmm.
But again, as I say, if you did bought the house next door when it did come up and you made a gain on that, that's not your principal private residence.
Mm-hmm.
So it's considered an investment property. It's considered a commercial transaction.
Mm-hmm.
You bought it for X pounds, you sold it for Y pound, you made a hefty profit.
Mm-hmm.
The Revenue Commissioner are going to say, we'll have 33% of that, thank you very much.
Okay, well, that clarifies that. You'll probably get a big horde of people now sort of selling up, moving to the country now that you know they won't have to pay any tax on the profit. Okay, and the last one for you, Fintan. I'm hoping to buy a house in a new development in Dublin. They've said that I need to have 6,000 with me on the day as my booking deposit if I'm to secure the property. Now, I'm wondering, if we give them 6,000 and then a surveyor or architect checks and tells me there's problems with the property, have I lost the 6,000?
That's a great question, Noel, because there's two questions in that. The first question is that if you give your 6,000 euros, you don't lose that. That's a booking deposit. And it's really a sign of your intention to proceed with the transaction. It's a wee bit like putting your money where your mouth is.
Mm-hmm.
So it's no good in saying, I love the house, I want the house. That's, you know, okay, we'll put your money down if you really want the house and we'll secure it for you. So that's 100% refundable. But I mentioned there about a surveyor and architect coming in to check the house. And that's more important, because very often when somebody does secure a house, and I'm going to move to a second-hand market now, and we pick a house there just up in Santry, and somebody sees a house in Santry and says, I like that house, and they buy that house, and they put down their booking deposit. Again, we're 100% refundable on that. There's no problem. If they send in an architect or a surveyor and they come out and say, Jeannie, there's rising damp there in the bathroom and the roof has to be replaced and the window has to be replaced and the kitchen has to be knocked and you're going to have to put 70 or 80,000 euros into the house.
Mm-hmm.
And the purchaser at that stage says, oh my God, I didn't realise that I was going to have to invest that level of money into the house. In those circumstances where they pull out, they're not going to get their money back from the surveyor or the architect. Like, they're going to pay those guys 200-300 euros, 350 euros, mm-hmm. maybe, and that money is then gone. So they just want to make very sure that when they put down the booking deposit, before they get the architect and surveyor in, that they are going to get loan approval, that they really do want this house, that there's not going to be any problems with the house. Because, as I say, once the architect goes in and you change your mind, you don't get the money back. When you put down your booking deposit, it's normally 6,000-7,000 euros. It's normally to cover the auctioneer's fees. The contract's then issued out by the vendor,
mm-hmm.
and the purchaser's solicitor receives them.
Okay.
And once the purchaser's solicitor has checked the title and satisfied themselves that everything is in order, they then will bring the clients in to sign the contracts. And once you sign the contracts, Noel, and this is very important, you have to pay the balance 10%. So on the property of 300,000, the deposit is 30.
Mm-hmm.
They've already paid 6 to the auctioneer or the selling agent. So they have to pay the balance 24 and sign the contracts. And now that money is at risk.
Okay.
The 6,000 booking and the 24 is now at risk, because you've now signed a contract. And once the purchaser and the vendor have signed the contract and the deposit is paid, you're bound in. If you decide to change your mind at that stage, it's too late.
Okay.
They can take the 30,000 euros deposit off you and say, you signed a contract, you agree to sale price, we all signed in, we all agreed to go. If you're pulling out now, you're going to lose your deposit. So the booking deposit isn't at risk until such time as the balance deposit is paid up.
Okay.
So it then can come at risk at that stage.
Oh, but once you've signed the contract, all bets off.
Kind of, yeah. Yep. So you want to be very careful and very sure that this is the house for you at that stage.
Okay. Just to clarify that now, just to go over a little bit of that again. So if you were put your deposit down, and then you get the surveyors in and they tell you, well, there's some problems here, you still have to pay the surveyors or architect, but you will get your deposit back. Am I correct there?
Certainly, yes. Sorry, no, I missed the last part. Give me that again.
Okay, yeah, well, it's sort of similar to the question that was put in. Say I go out and I want to buy a house, and I give them the $6,000, but I say to them, I want to bring my own people in to check, and they say, no problem. When I bring in an architect, surveyor, as you say, it costs $200 or $300, they come back and tell me, no, leave this alone. I will be entitled to, I'd have to pay them all right, because they've done a bit of work for me, but I will get my deposit back, won't I?
Absolutely, 100%.
Okay. Just to clarify 100%. That. Okay, so you just have to pay the people that you've employed on the side. Okay.
And listen, sorry, just to say, I mean, it's money well spent to get an expert in like that. If you're checking a car, sometimes people bring a mechanic with them. Like, it's a big spend, it's a lifetime spend. They absolutely should get somebody in. But I think that the auctioneers very often would ask people to get their architect or surveyor in immediately. Mm. I don't agree with that. I think that they need to put down their booking deposit. They need to drive around the area at night. They need to park up their car. They need to walk around the area. They need to check how near am I to the nearest public transport. If it's a bus stop at Lewis or Dart, how long is it going to take me to get there? It's no good in old seeing a bus stop down the road and go, oh, great, there's a bus stop nearby. And they move into the house and realise that only one bus goes past that bus stop an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they need to make inquiries. How many buses go past the bus? How frequent are they? They also need to ask in general in relation to the area, what's the community like? What's the school like? Can I get my children into the school? What's the area like? Is there a lot of rental properties in the area? Is there a lot of settled people in the area?
Mm.
What's the age profile in the area? If you're a young couple starting with a young child and you're moving into an old settled area, there might be a lot of old people in there, which may or may not suit. So they need to do all of that due diligence first. They also need to make absolutely sure that they're loan approved by a bank.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to be very positive that this is the house for them. Mm-hmm. And it's only at that stage they should get the architect in.
Yeah.
Because if they get the architect in earlier and the architect comes out and says, yeah, the house is actually okay, and he charges €300 and that's okay, there's no difficulty there, and then they start making inquiries in relation to what's the area like, or do I feel safe walking around this area, or do I like the area, or they may sit there on at different times of the day. Sometimes people will go out and look at a house on a Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock and think that the area is lovely and it's nice and it's quiet and it's pleasant and it's peaceful. And that's fine. But if they're there on a Saturday morning, they might realise that the GAA pitch is down the road and that there's cars and there's coming and there's going and there's activity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're a younger family, that might be perfect and it might be right down your road. But if you're an older person and you mentioned somebody downsizing earlier in our conversation, they may not be as enamoured with all of the traffic and the comings and goings on a Saturday morning from 9 o'clock till 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. So you just have to be careful in relation to a purchase of a house.
Just a bit of research, common sense, I suppose.
A bit of research. Yeah. The schools are very, very important, because some people I knew, I had two people before, and one was living close to the school and it suited them because they're a starting family and they wanted to be close to the school. But then I had a different scenario where I had an older person. The last thing she needed to be doing was living close to the school, because that means that the people are dropping between 8 and 9. Then school, I think, for the juniors finished at 1 o'clock, so there's going to be collections between 1 and half 1. Then it's going to calm down to kind of 2:15 till the senior school finished, and then there's going to be further collection between 2:15 and 2:45. And then there was after school activities in the school that were going to be collection at 3 o'clock to 3:30. And then they're using the school hall that evening for debating or for taekwondo or for whatever. So there's further traffic. So it meant that there was going to be constant traffic outside that house on an ongoing basis.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a big problem for that little lady.
Yeah. Okay, and just check everything out. Even, as you said, like if someone comes with a young child and there's mostly older people living in the area, the child needs some integration with kids during the day for play as well. So everything like that comes into the
equation. Yeah, so I'd recommend the architect or surveyor, but they just need to be absolutely sure that this is the best for them, and then it's worth the spend and it's money well spent. But sometimes some people get the money spent a little bit too early in the process, and then they don't get the mortgage approval, so they can't buy the house. Or they decide they're not happy with the area for whatever reason and they can't buy the house. So there's different reasons like that. They just need to be careful. So due diligence before they start. I'd normally recommend, though, for anybody starting a house, young or old, that they write down a wish list. And what the wish list is what they want from a house that they're moving into.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to do this before they find a house. So by way of example, we have a young couple, and he said, well, listen, I want a side passage so I can bring my bike down the side and put it in the garden shed. And she said, well, I want a side passage because I want to bring the bins out. I don't want the bins at the front of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And he might say, well, I want some, you know, a driveway so I can park the car. I don't want to leave the car on the road. And she might say, well, I want a downstairs toilet because I don't want to be traipsing up and down the stairs. But when they jot all these things down on a list and then they go looking at a house, they can tick the boxes to see how many boxes are ticked. Now, it's unlikely they'll find a house that ticks all of the boxes,
mm-hmm.
but at least they'll have an awareness in relation to what boxes it doesn't tick.
Mm-hmm. And then they won't be ringing you up.
Well, it doesn't have the side passage. It's a mid-terraced house. Okay, well, so be it. We're going to get on with it because it's the right price. And it has a downstairs toilet and the off-street car parking, and it takes everything else.
Okay.
So we're just going to have to forego the side passage. But so they've more got an awareness of it rather than buying a house. Because you never actually thought that we don't have this or that.
And then later on, if they get too much disagreement comes up and the difference is too much, they'll only be contacting Lawler and Partners to see how they split up the house and that sort of thing.
Hopefully not.
Okay, just give us your website there, Fintan, before you go.
Yep, it's just www.lawlerpartners, L-A-W-L-O-R, lawlerpartners.ie.
Okay, and as we always say, look, if you have any doubts at all, just talk to your solicitor and he will give you all the advice you need. Talk to you again in a week or two, Fintan, but thank you very much always for your time.
Good to talk to you as always, Noel. Take care.
And thank you. Bye.